What is going on? Thank you for tuning in to the MMA Podcast, episode 220, February 10th, a Saturday. Tonight, from Perth, Australia, UFC 221, a fun middleweight contest between Luke Rockhold and Yoel Romero. Going to preview that in a second. Joined, as always, by P-Money. Pat, what's going on?
Jake, just chilling. It's a super Saturday. We're living it up in SoCal. Couldn't be happier. It's a beautiful day here. Fight Day podcast. It's a rare one, but ready to go, my man.
For all of your MMA needs, follow him on Twitter at SweetPappyJones. Looking at this card coming up tonight, should be fun. UFC 221. First, I did want to touch on last week's card because we haven't done a show since UFC Fight Night. What was it? UFC Fight Night 125. They're stacking up now. just like our show, episode 220. Holy shit. a fun card on Fox Sports 1, Machida versus Anders. Controversial split decision. But before we talk about that main card, what did you think of the rest? Obviously, you had a lot of decisions. You had a few fun finishes. Yuri Alcantara and Davidson Figueiredo. Thiago Santos defeating Anthony Smith in the second round. And one devastating one, Valentina Shevchenko defeating Priscilla Cachoeira via rear naked choke, 4 minutes and 25 seconds into the second round. everyone agrees at this point, not only should that fight have been stopped earlier, people are questioning why that fight was made at all. Valentina being such an obvious favorite, having so much more experience and apparently having so much more skill both going into the fight and, as we saw, displayed. When you should never see a fight where the final punch total is 251-1. Once someone's landed that amount of punches and it goes unanswered, which, you know, you don't necessarily need to rally back via punches or kicks, you know, as long as you're just defending yourself, as long as you're actively fighting, that's all you need to do. That's not what Priscilla was doing. Valentina was just raining down strike after strike, even at points looking up at Mario Yamasaki, like, are you going to fucking stop this fight? Like, what's going on? A lot of question marks coming from that fight. Mario Yamasaki even further making a mistake by making a comment on the fight saying that he was going to let her fight it out like a warrior, which that's not your job as a referee. Your job isn't to let fighters be a warrior. Your job is to stop the fight when they can't answer the bell and they can't answer 251 punches to one. It's ridiculous the fight went as long as it did. I think Dana White said something along the lines of Mario Yamasaki won't ever ref a UFC fight again, which is strange for him to say because I don't think he has any authority over that. That is absolutely up to the discretion of the Athletic Commission, not the promoting body, the UFC. So how Dana thinks he can make that proclamation, whether or not it's true, Dana hasn't exactly been 100% with everything he's promised and said. But regardless, it is a huge fuck-up by Mario. But as we've seen, there we go. I think I said it right that last time. I cannot speak. I am stupid. Refs and judges just are not being held accountable for what they do. And it's weird. It's, you know, in any other profession, whether you're a mechanic or a salesman, you know, if you're not doing your job, you're not going to keep your job. But somehow these judges and these refs can blow it over and over and over and over and nothing ever happens. I don't know. I don't know what kind of result we can come to when we know that, I mean, you know, I don't know who, I guess the head of this, of the state athletic commissions are in charge of that, but, you know, they really seem to have no interest in removing those who seem incompetent to fill the role. You know, this isn't Mario Yamasaki's first fuck up. I'm done running my mouth. You should have cut me off way earlier just because I'm yammering at this point. Pat, what did you think of the whole Shevchenko fuck up and anything else leading up to that main card between Machida and Anders?
Yeah, you know, no, you were doing good, by the way. You were fine. I really enjoyed the card. Started out very strong, had three straight finishes, some good, good fun fights. And then even the ones that did go to decision, solid scraps. The Sergio Moraes versus Tim Means decision, it was very split on Twitter. You know, it seemed like a lot of people were getting on Tim Means a bit, but at the same time, a lot of people did think that Tim Means should have been given that fight. If you look at MMA decisions, I want to say there was one MMA journalist that scored that fight for Sergio Moraes and maybe like almost 20 others. Literally every other MMA journalist there was scored that fight for Tim Means. Interesting one there, but solid fight overall. Good back and forth. And Moraes came out really strong in that first round too. Like, he was hitting Means with some shots. I'm like, I felt like Means should not have been getting hit so much by Moraes, but Moraes definitely, definitely did good in that fight. It was a real close one. Good scrap. Thiago Santos versus Anthony Smith. Great back and forth war. Yeah, great scraps overall. Douglas Silva, De Andrade versus Chito Vera. Man, that was a great fight as well. A lot of solid scraps. The Shevchenko versus Cachoeira. Crime scene of a fight. That was insane. I couldn't believe that that fight went as long as it did. I mean, within the first 30 seconds, it looked like the Cachoeira just had no business in there with Valentina. She came out and she was hitting her on the jaw early and often. I mean, it was kind of surprising to me she was taking her down. And I feel like she was almost going for the Roy Nelson in the Ultimate Fighter Season 10 kind of approach, where he just wanted to get through the fights. You know, he had the tournament and he was just taking guys down, you know, getting the crucifix, things like that. He had some knockouts on the Ultimate Fighter as well. I mean, especially in the finale, to be sure. But, you know, I feel like that was kind of what he was doing. He wasn't inflicting a ton of damage. I mean, look at the Kimbo Slice fight. I felt like that was kind of what Valentina was doing. She was trying to Kimbo it here, but Yamasaki, he just at no point saw fit to stop the fight, regardless of how many times Shevchenko was punching Cachoeira in the face. And I mean, the elbows that were hitting Cachoeira in the first round, to everybody saying, yeah, well, it was 250 girl punches. Let Valentina punch you in the face. I swear to God, you'll probably be knocked out. Like, that woman is a trained fighter. She could probably cave just about any dude's face in. And the elbows that she put on Priscilla were testament to her power. She had her cut up, bloody, stomped a mud hole in her. And in the first round, absolutely, that fight could have definitely been stopped right there. I don't even know how it got to the second, let alone lasting as long as it did. It was apparent to both Valentina and Priscilla, apparently, that no matter how many times Valentina punched Cachoeira in the face, Yamasaki just wasn't going to stop the fight. So Valentina went for the choke. Priscilla was probably very thankful for that, and the fight was over. I mean, it was just an amazing show all the way around. And what corner in the world, when your fighter says, oh, I blew out my knee, they say, shut up, get back out there. Like, are you kidding me? After the first round she took, and she's telling you her knee's blown out, and you're sending her right back out there. Just an amazing disregard for fighter safety, and just a complete lack of foresight all the way around from the referees and the corner. A lot of people also giving some due heat to the UFC. I mean, really, at a certain point, though, sometimes these matches have to be made. I mean, there's just when no one wants to fight a certain fighter and you find someone who can fight, and they're 8-0 as a professional, undefeated, I mean, that's not for nothing. There's something to be said there. It's not like she was 4-0 or 2-0 or something like that. I mean, she was making her debut in a UFC co-main event in Brazil, which was a big card. But there have been bigger upsets. And, you know, again, that's why they make the fights. That's why these matches happen. How big of an underdog was Rose Namajunas against Joanna Jędrzejczyk? And she knocked her out. A lot of people were saying they shouldn't have made that fight either. But look at that. We have a new champion. So I don't fault the UFC as much for that fight. I mean, ultimately, yeah, they put it together. There's a huge skill discrepancy there. But, hey, you never know. That's why they fight. But that could have easily been stopped a lot earlier. And, I mean, a lot of damage could have been saved there.
Yeah, and you know, I think there is blame on both sides there, but probably more on that late stoppage. Moving ahead to that main event, Leona Machida versus Eric Anders. Simply put, I gave the first and the fifth to Machida. I scored it 48-47 Anders. You know, you never can really call it a robbery when it's a split, and you gave it 48-47 to one guy. It's a five-round fight. It's an outdated 10-9 scoring system. You have got it 3-2 on your scorecard. Someone else has it 2-3 on their scorecard, and the other side wins. Machida was doing what he loves to do, which is make you chase and then zap you with, you know, a counter kick. He loves that counter cross punch. You know, obviously employs that karate style. A lot of kicks, likes to keep distance. Doesn't really like to throw that much unless he's countering someone's attack. Kind of made Eric Anders chase him and play into his game all night. Which, to give, you know, Anders credit, I gave him rounds 2, 3, and 4. I thought he pushed the pace. I thought he did more damage. And I thought he should have won. And I think this is yet another example of crowd noise maybe kind of playing up one fighter in a fight that's very close and giving him that advantage. If, you know, not consciously, subconsciously in the judge's eyes, that maybe that fighter was doing better than he really was, just because you're hearing the crowd roar every time they do anything. So, yeah, I don't know if I'd go as far to call it a robbery, but I thought Anders won. He's very, very green. Obviously, he has a long way to go to be up there with the top of the middleweight class, and I think that showed here. You know, he really wasn't able to exhibit that furiosity that he was able to against other opponents who weren't as defensively minded. But, you know, he will get better. He'll probably get more patient. And, you know, the guy is athletic as hell, green as hell, pretty young still. Not super young. I think he's, what, like 30 or something? But young as far as not taking much damage fight-wise. He's probably taken a hell load of damage just from being a linebacker in the SEC. But that's something we really haven't explored in the MMA world yet. That much. We have had former football players, but none really with an extensive career. But anyways, that's a whole new tangent side road that I love to do, going down random side branch roads that really have no meaning or point. Pat, what did you think about Machida versus Anders?
Well, Jake, I like taking the scenic route, too. It's always fun. Machida versus Anders, it was a good fight. I certainly thought that should have gone to Anders as well. Machida definitely came out strong in the first round, first and fifth. I'm with you, Jake. I think the first and fifth were his. It was classic Machida in those rounds, but man, especially in the second round, I thought Anders was going to get a stoppage there. It looked like he was hitting him with some big bombs, but I'd definitely say the majority of the rounds were his. you have to expect that if that fight is going to a decision, it's going to Lyoto. I mean, the main event in Brazil, we had seen what had happened with the Moraes-Means fight earlier. You have to put the emphasis on that and try and get that stop. I was kind of surprised, even from the outset, you know, from the first round, that he gave Machida that range and that space. Again, Machida's still a very dangerous guy. You don't want to rush in and end up like so many fighters who tried the rushing and attack have ended up, you know, look at Ryan Bader, classic example, just knocked out, put to sleep on his feet, rushing in careless. Machida still has that accuracy. So a decent amount of patience actually shown by Anders in my estimation, and probably should have done enough to get the judge's nod. But the home cooked decision, not a big surprise down there in Brazil. So good on Eric for taking the fight. It was a good showing in spite of the loss. And for Machida, this is his first victory in the USADA era. Albeit definitely comes with an asterisk, but, you know, he hung in there for all 25 minutes, had a good 25 minutes in him and enough to come back and win the fifth round. So positive signs there for Machida. Maybe he can take this and rally this into some sort of momentum. And as for Anders, I'm sure he'll be back. He'll be much stronger as a fighter for this, only his first professional loss. And again, he probably should have taken this fight anyways, but and gotten the victory. But I think he'll come back much improved.
And Lyoto gets a much needed win on his record. Where he goes next, I guess we will have to wait and see. Bringing us, I guess, if we have nothing else on that card, to the week in MMA news, Max Holloway dropping out of UFC 222, like we mentioned last week. He had a funny tweet a few days ago, said, quote, "I asked the docs if we could cut off my leg, then asked the commission if I could fight handicapped. They told me at the end of the day, it is what it is." Which is his trademark saying. Does that mean the doctors like were encouraging him to cut his leg off and fight with one leg? He probably, I mean, I mean, he's not thinking about it, but if he cuts his leg off, he's not going to be defending his belt at 145. He's going to be like a 115er, a one, like, yeah, he's not going to be, I mean, unless he like bulks the fuck up. I mean, you're not going to be defending your strap at 145 if you're chopping, you know, your leg, which you have to assume is at least what, 20, 30 pounds, your legs have got to be what, 60, 70? So, you know, maybe we see Max Holloway on one leg after he chops off his leg and mistakenly has to move down two weight classes and fight Mighty Mouse on two legs. Maybe this is like an Anthony Robles strategy where, like, you're just super jacked up top and win the fight. I don't know. We'll see. It is what it is, bro. Anyway, we're going to see Edgar versus Ortega now instead of Max Holloway versus Edgar. That's going to be your co-main event. The only thing that sucks about that is I wish we could see Frankie Edgar and Brian Ortega as a five-rounder. This is like one of your weird cases where like I would much rather have that as like your main event for a UFC fight night in like Norfolk or some random ass shit, like just so we can see that as a 5-round fight. Unfortunately, Edgar versus Ortega will be a 3-rounder. That'll be your co-main event, and your main event will be Chris Cyborg against the widely well-known MMA international superstar Yana Kunitskaya. You know, that Russian. Is she Russian? The 10-3 Russian, Yana Kunitskaya. Yana Foxy Kunitskaya, the 28-year-old who will be taking on Chris Cyborg in her UFC debut at UFC 222 on the main event. Cyborg versus Kunitskaya.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, what do you. I mean, here. A lot of people are really bemoaning and criticizing this matchmaking. And I guess I understand where it's coming from, because no one's ever heard of Yana Kunitsuka in their life, even the hardcores. But to that I say, who else are you trying to plug in? Like, we've already seen Holly. We've seen, you know, I don't know. There are maybe one or two other options, but it's not like the female featherweight division is deep and chock full of talent. In fact, I don't know if there's more than two fighters in it currently. I mean, you know, fighters at bantamweight aren't exactly clamoring to move up to 45 to challenge Cyborg. So, right now you have, you know, the 19-1 terrifying Cyborg Christine Justino. No one wants to fight her, so the UFC has to bring in the Invicta champ, who in her last two Invicta fights lost to Tanya Evinger in March 2017, and then defeated Raquel Paalui in August 2017 via unanimous decision. So, the Invicta champ coming over here, and I mean, I appreciate it. You know, it's the Invicta champ, so it's not not completely out of bounds, and it's someone. But I mean, we all know what's going to happen. This girl is going to get her ass beat quickly. She's going to get killed. I don't know. You have any thoughts on it, Pat?
Well, yeah, this is definitely a quick check for all parties involved. Kunitskaya, I mean, I'm sure she's game. You know, these Russians, they're always tough. But, I mean, she did lose to Tanya Evinger. She had the no contest to her and then was submitted in the second round against her. And we had seen Tanya Evinger against Cyborg. Always with the disclaimer, we know MMA math is not perfect, but that is one of the best litmus tests that we have. And oftentimes it is right, and you just do a little extrapolation here. I mean, when you look at what Cyborg was able to do to the woman that beat Kunitskaya.
Yeah, let's extrapolate that ass-whooping that Cyborg put on Tanya Evinger.
Yes, yes. I think I used that word right. I sounded smart, right?
Oh yeah.
That's but I'm certainly not outkicking the coverage. The MMA podcast listeners are among the most intelligent in the land. However, I digress.
I fucked that word up too. Awesome.
Oh, that's great. Well, that one's even hard to say at any point, but yes, this is just a couple ladies coming through. I mean, how else are you going to put together a championship fight? The UFC obviously was just scrambling for something to save this card from turning it into a fight pass or canceling the card entirely. So big ups to both these ladies for coming together, making this fight happen. Hey, it is a legit undisputed title here. You know, it's not an interim of an interim or something like that. Or an interim that was turned undisputed that, you know, has yet to be defended. Or this is a legit title fight, as legit as it gets. So, should be good for as long as it lasts, which I don't see being incredibly long. But again, like like I mentioned earlier, I mean, no one thought Thug Rose was going to be a big test for Yoenny and Jacek, and look how that turned out. Then again, this could also turn out to be more like the Shevchenko-Cachoeira fight. Guess we'll just have to wait till March and see.
What else do we have in the MMA news bucket? Tyron Woodley voicing his, he wants to fight Nate Diaz next. And a lot of other welterweights have some hurt feelings about that. Not hurt, but some opposing opinions about who the champ should defend his belt against next. My only issue with it is he just needs to get his gimmick straight. You know, He's saying people like Colby need to do more before they earn a title shot, but then saying he's going to take on Nate Diaz next, who Nate Diaz, I think it's been a very, very, very long time since Nate Diaz even defeated a welterweight. And no, I'm not counting Conor McGregor as a welterweight. So to say he's earned a shot at the welterweight title is kind of insane. But, you know, at this point, the UFC has set a precedent of awarding batshit insane title shots. So it wouldn't be out of the norm to see that. Nate Diaz's options right now seem to be to wait for Conor McGregor or maybe take a title shot against Tyron Woodley. McGregor seems to be on the trajectory of a boxing rematch versus Floyd this summer, which good for them. They're going to make a lot more money. But, yeah, maybe we see Woodley versus Diaz while people like Dos Anjos and Covington kind of have to take a backseat. Whether they fight each other for number one contendership, whether Nate Diaz accepts the fight, I think Woodley would smash Diaz. But all of this, I don't know, all of this back and forth at welterweight is getting a little exhausting. I like to just hear that Woodley is over his shoulder surgery and has accepted a fight so we can kind of get along with things.
Yeah, agreed. It really, this is a questionable call out from Woodley. Certainly when you're talking about the qualifications of your opponents and the validity of a title shot and things like that for them. And you want to fight Nate Diaz. Dude, Nate Diaz is my boy. Love the Diaz brothers. They have been some of my favorites since forever. And yeah, this might be one to get Nate out of retirement because the Diaz brothers for years, the better part of a decade, have been saying they want their money, they want to get paid, and they have been some of the best attractions in mixed martial arts. I mean, anytime you watch them fight, they are never in a boring fight, and they always bring it. Gosh, I want to say the last time Nate had a win at welterweight, that had to be 2013 or something like that, maybe even 2012. I can't even recall. That was a while ago. Went 2-2 at 170 pounds. In my estimation, it was 3-1. He beat Dong Young Kim. That fight should not have gone DHK's way. Rory McDonald definitely manhandled him. That was a legit loss at 170. But then again, in my book, that's the only loss he incurred at 170. And Tyron Woodley, we saw what happened to him against Rory McDonald. That was also quite the massacre. So that's the MMA math for them. So who knows? Maybe this fight's a little more even. Plus, Nate, he's tall. He's long. He's got the boxing. He's got the chin. He's got the jiu-jitsu. I don't know. And people talk about, Woodley, he's not an exciting fighter. You know, he's been putting on some boring fights. I don't know that you'd be able to do that so much with Nate Diaz. He is going to force the fight. He'll work the jits if you're trying to wall and stall him or just lay and pray on him. And he's got some engaging striking too. Those hands are fun to watch. That stock and slap, man. So I think it would be a legit fight if it did happen. But yeah, I would certainly prefer to see Covington or Dos Anjos get the shot before Diaz.
As would I. Let's turn our attention to UFC 221 this Saturday. At normal time for us Americans, let me triple check that. I checked before, but just to double check. Yep, it will be going down for us in the U.S. just the normal time as it usually does at 10 p.m. Saturday night, the main card, the prelims kicking off at 8, the early prelims at 6:30. I guess we'll start like we usually do with the prelims. Ross Pearson and Mizuto Hirota kicking off the UFC Fight Pass prelims, the Fox Sports 1 prelims. Hussier Formiga versus Ben Wynn. That should be a fun fight. You have Formiga, who once he gets on you, he's really tough to stop. really, really good at the takedown and taking mount and back mount, just really latching on and destroying an opponent on the ground. Well, Ben Wynn, obviously going to try and keep things standing. Jeremy Kennedy versus Alexander Volkanovski. Rob Wilkinson versus Israel Adesanya at middleweight. I know I got that wrong. And Damian Brown versus Dong Young Kim at lightweight. This is your main event for the prelims, and deservingly so. This stylistically is going to be a really fun fight. Both of these guys are strikers. And like I said, stylistically, it'll be interesting because you have Dong Young Kim, not the welterweight, not the stun gun, but the lightweight version. I like to call him Dong Young Kim 2. No disrespect to him, but the stun gun was first. DHK 2 really presses forward and strikes pretty well, while Damian Brown really has shown decent acumen at fighting off the back foot, throwing kicks, keeping distance, throwing that jab out. So I'm looking forward to that lightweight scrap. I think it's pretty even as far as Vegas goes. So it could go either way. And as far as, you know, both of them being strikers, maybe we see a finish. I'll bring you up to the co-main. We have Tyson Pedro, who is the hometown guy. Looks like he's been throwing a bone where he's a big favorite against Saparbek Safarov. The hometown guy, Jake Matthews, in a fight that's not so sure as Tyson Pedro's, because Li Jingliang is a motherfucker, like I was talking about Dong Young Kim earlier. Li really likes to move forward, throw a lot of strikes. How Jake Matthews responds to that, we will see. I think Matthews might be an underdog. And then at heavyweight, Tai Tuivasa taking on Cyril Asker. Pat, your thoughts on the fights leading up to Hunt Blades and Romero Rockhold?
Well, Jake, this is one of the more underwhelming cards for a pay-per-view.
It is very much so.
As far as the name value, I mean, really, Ross Pearson versus Mizuto Hirota, that's one of your bigger names there, at least in Ross Pearson, probably one of the biggest names, arguably, on the entire card. That one, that's the featured bout on the UFC Fight Pass portion of the card. And Hussein Formiga versus Ben Wynn kicking off Fox Sports 1 portion. I mean, that could easily be on the pay-per-view portion, probably should be on the pay-per-view portion of the card. Just, you know, and I don't doubt that this will be another card where, I mean, much like last week's card, there was a lot of good action. Maybe not the best known of names. Actually, it was a little bit better last week, just, you know, some of the more familiar Brazilians. But we see it every now and then with the international cards, which, you know, you have the quote-unquote UFC regional circuit kind of coming out. And, yeah, I mean, Jake Matthews versus Li Jingliang should be a great fight there. Cyril Asker versus Tai Tuivasa, you know, heavyweight scrap, always great. Tuivasa, you know, had the nice flying knee knockout in his last fight. I want to say Asker's coming off a TKO victory in his own right. So should be some good matchups there. But, man, trying to sell that $60 pay-per-view, a little hard with the name recognition. But there are some very good matchups on here and should still provide for some good action.
And that brings us to Mark Hunt versus Curtis Blaydes as the co-main event. Curtis Blaydes, a slight favorite, minus 155. You know, we know what's going to happen in this fight, and I think that's why Blaydes is the favorite, because stylistically, you know, Blaydes is going to try and wrap up and tie up Hunt, not allow Hunt to go headhunting, no pun intended. Let him, you know, find those shots and land clean. And I think Blaydes is probably young enough, has a bigger gas tank, is athletic enough, is able to use his wrestling and just out kind of pace him, out gas tank him. It's going to be a 3-round fight. I bet one round we see him just pressed up against the cage. one round we see him taken down, and the other round maybe Hunt wins. I don't know. That's a prediction. But I have it 29-28. Blades wins a decision in this one. That's my specific prediction fight. Pat, who you got?
Solid prediction there, Jake. This is a tough one for me. I'm a huge fan of Mark Hunt. Who isn't a Mark Hunt, Mark, really? Truly one of the, talk about personalities in the mixed martial arts game. He is one of the greater personalities and just one of the greater fighters. I mean, his combat sports record is legendary, and he's produced some great fights both in kickboxing and mixed martial arts. Curtis Blades should be on a 4-fight win streak right now. He, 3 fights ago, had a fight overturned due to a positive marijuana test. And so if it were not for that, he would be on a 4-fight winning streak, only having lost due to a doctor's stoppage in his UFC debut against Francis Ngannou. And since that time, he has looked like he's gotten a lot better. I mean, he's shown better movement, really great movement for a heavyweight, and just like looking like his skills are really coming together. I think he can certainly have what it takes to beat up Mark Hunt. He's a much larger heavyweight as well than Mark Hunt. Mark Hunt's always been on a little bit of the shorter spectrum for heavyweight. So he's going to have some height and reach to overcome when he's fighting Curtis Blades come tonight. But, I mean, if there's anyone who could do it, it's Mark Hunt. He's probably one of the larger height discrepancies that there's ever been was Mark Hunt against Stefan Struve. I don't know that there's ever been a bigger height discrepancy in mixed martial arts than Mark Hunt. Knocked Stefan Struve out, broke his jaw, something savage. I mean, you never know with Hunt. He's always in it as long as he's on his feet. And be that as it may, even though this is in his hometown, I feel like Blades really has come a long way, and I feel like he has he stepped his game up quite a bit. And this being a 3-rounder, I think this will be a solid showcase for Curtis Blades. I think he's come far enough to where he'll be able to put together a winning game plan for this one, and I'd say probably taking the decision as well.
And that brings us to the interim middleweight championship, Yoel Romero, Luke Rockhold. I'm so back and forth on this fight. Man, this is really, really tough. You have Luke Rockhold, the former champion who lost his belt to Michael Bisping, Yoel Romero, who just fought for the belt back at UFC 213 in his most recent fight, lost to Robert Whittaker for what was at that time the interim UFC belt. So he's going to have 2 back-to-back shots at the interim belt. The fight against Robert Whittaker was a 5-rounder fight of the night. It was very close, but Robert Whittaker ended up on top. What do you think happens here, man? I want to hear your thoughts on it first. Really, I mean, the breakdown is obvious. You have Luke Rockhold, the guy who's got seemingly every tool in the toolbox, a rangy striker, big guy. I mean, could fight at 205. Has talked about fighting at 205 in the past. Can kick great. Can punt. You know, is a great striker. Technique wise, you know, a awesome striker. Has a lot of finishes. You know, TKO'd Chris Weidman on the ground as a threat as well. 4 of his last 5 wins coming by sub. He had that inverted triangle against Tim Boach, the guillotine on Bisping, the rear naked choke on Lyoto, and most recently making David Branch submit by punches in the second round. Still counts as a submission, folks. His jits are on point. And I guess one thing it may come down to is what happens when the fight goes to the ground. Yoel's probably going to try and take him down and inflict some damage. Can he stay on top? Can Luke do anything from the bottom? Will Luke have any chances to be on top? He seems to be able to inflict a lot of damage from top position, being so big. There are a lot of different variables that play into this, and I really Man, I've probably gone back and forth in my head 100 times on who wins this fight. So, Pat, who do you think wins?
Jake, I mean, this is a tough one to decipher, tough one to prognosticate. Rockhold and Romero, definitely two of the cream of the crop at 185 pounds. I mean, Romero with his Olympic wrestling credentials, I really lean towards that because, I mean, the wrestling, being able to help dictate where the fight goes, that's a huge part of it. Granted, Rockhold does have the perceived jiu-jitsu advantage there, so is the ground even somewhere that Romero's going to want to be? The striking, Romero has dynamite in his hands, super crazy knockout power, retains that power even late in the fight. Rockhold, very long, very rangy. He's got some solid strikes himself. But, man, I think I got to go with Romero in this one. I feel like he is going to be able to use that wrestling. I think he's going to be able to use that power that he's got. And I think he's going to TKO our boy Rockhold. I'm thinking it's probably going to be kind of a ground and pound type of situation. Maybe he's got him up against the cage, applying some pressure and just unload some big bombs. I think the wrestling is going to help, and I think the striking differential or the power in striking is definitely in Romero's favor here. And I mean, Rockhold could obviously get the job done. I would not be surprised if he won this fight, but I think I'm taking Romero here.
And you know, I will play devil's advocate here, even though I do see picking Romero. You know, you look at Rockhold's record, you see the two losses. They were big KOs. The spinning heel kick by Vitor and that clean punch that Bisping landed at UFC 199. As far as explosive strikes go, that is Yoel's game. But I'm picking Rockhold to play devil's advocate. I think he's going to go in with a game plan knowing it's a 5-round fight, and maybe he lets Yoel burn himself out in the first and second round. Because even though, you know, Yoel has scored a lot of wins going past the first and second round. In fact, believe it or not, all of his finishes recently, whether it's the Weidman one, the one against Lyoto Machida, the one against Tim Kennedy, the one against Derek Brunson, all of those were third round finishes, which is interesting. Keep that in mind. I think Luke will try and pace out the fight, and I think Yoel might struggle the same way he did against Robert Whittaker, in that Whittaker really used his size and range to an advantage. I'm sure Luke and his camp will be watching that. I think Luke overall is probably the better fighter here, but stylistically, you know, he has shown himself to be susceptible to that shot. So will Yoel land that shot, I think, is the question. If it goes to a decision, I'm taking Luke Rockhold. If it ends by submission, I'm probably taking Luke as well. Even though probably, I don't know, I would be shocked if Luke was able to submit Rockhold, just because wrestling-wise and ground-wise, Yoel is maybe the best wrestler in the history of the sport. So, probably not going to put himself in that vulnerable a spot, but you never know. And, I don't know, I will pick this one, Rockhold by decision, we'll call it. Anything else on the card? Anything else for the people before we log off? Get out of here.
Jake, you know what it is. Nothing but love for the people. Big ups to everybody for joining us on this Super Saturday, this fight day Saturday. And hope everyone has a fun time watching the fights, and God bless y'all for tuning in.
Enjoy the fights. Enjoy the Olympics. Olympics kicking off soon. Fly, Eagles, fly. Congrats to Philly for beating the Pats. And we will see you next week. Till then, we love you. We gone.
Fuck the Eagles.
Oh, man.